Tomorrow night at 9.
Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic this hour is revitalizing mid-market, how tech, businesses, arts, and government are working to bring sustainable change to this diverse neighborhood. For the last 20 years, San Francisco city leaders have promised to address the longstanding challenges facing the mid-market street neighborhood, but these efforts have never resulted in any sustainable improvements. Now, under the leadership of Mayor Ed Lee and the Board of Supervisors, San Francisco is taking a fresh approach to revitalizing Mid-Market Street that includes attracting tech businesses and actively reaching out to arts organizations, community groups, and residents to create a new vision for this diverse neighborhood. Tonight, we will talk about the potential benefits and risks of the city's efforts to support change in mid-market and whether this approach will have a lasting positive impact for all stakeholders. As the city recruits companies such as Twitter and Zendesk to locate in mid-market, what does this influx of tech workers mean for the neighborhood's current residents and small businesses? And what about the arts? Due to low rents, mid-market has traditionally been the home to many artists and arts groups. How is the city envisioning the role of the arts in the new roadmap for mid-market? And lastly, how does the city plan to address vacant storefronts, homelessness, and public safety, which were cited as top concerns in the mayor's Central Market Economic Strategy Report? Joining me to discuss these questions and more are in studio Jane Kim, Supervisor of District 6, San Francisco. Supervisor Kim was elected in November 2010 to represent District 6 of San Francisco, which includes mid-market, which includes the Tenderloin and Civic Center neighborhoods. And Supervisor Kim's career has included working as a community organizer at Chinatown Community Development Center and as a civil rights attorney and president of the San Francisco Board of Education. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We also have Tomiqua Moss, who's the community planning policy director for SPUR, which is San Francisco Planning and Urban Research. And Tomiqua coordinates SPUR's work on housing and community planning. Prior to joining the staff, she was the founding project director of the San Francisco Community Justice Center of the Superior Court of California, City and County of San Francisco. And Tomiqua has been a social worker and a community activist for more than a decade. Welcome, Tomiqua.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Ellen Parker, who's the project manager for the Neighborhood Economic Development of the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development. And Ellen is working to implement the Central Market Economic Strategy and the Mayor's Fashion San Francisco Initiative. And she has focused on integrating arts into the city's economic fabric since the late 1990s when she ran an art gallery in South of Market. And Ellen oversaw the Divisadero Streetscape revitalization in 2008. Welcome, Ellen.
Thanks so much.
We also have by phone Ellen Richard, who's the executive director of the American Conservatory Theater, ACT, which was and was most recently executive director of the Off-Broadway's nonprofit Second Stage Theater in New York City. And from 1983 to 2005, Ellen Richard enjoyed a rich and varied career with Roundabout Theater Company, and she's the recipient of 6 Tony Awards. Thank you, Ellen, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
And last but not least, we have Tiffany Apchinsky, who's the Community Relations Manager for Zendesk. And Tiffany drafted the first ever community benefits agreement between the City of San Francisco and the pre-IPO tech companies taking advantage of the city's payroll tax exclusion. And she has overseen the implementation of the benefits agreement since January 2012. And prior to this role, she worked as a journalist covering business, tech, and San Francisco in San Francisco. So welcome, Tiffany, and thank you for joining us also. Oh, you're right. Excuse me. Tiffany won't be joining us until 7:30. We will bring her in then. But now you know her history. We invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And we'll start taking calls around 7:20, 7:30. So what a wonderful group of women we have here tonight. And I'd like to start with Ellen Parker as the project manager, neighborhood economic development at the mayor's office. You know, mayor's been trying for years to turn around the blight and empty storefronts on Market Street. So what is Mayor Lee and the city doing that's different this time?
I think this time, one of the things that's different is we've got a clear strategy with the economic strategy, which was a massive 10-month planning process. But it integrates not just only working from the city level, but we're also working, you know, really integrating with the arts groups that are there, trying to build the private partnerships with community members. And it's a very big document that has a lot of different points. But the 6 points of the strategy very quickly are to, you know, the first point in the document is to stabilize the existing community. We also look at activating the public realm, stabilizing the creative arts community, and then vacancies, building community capacity and safety. And so this is kind of an all hands on deck effort. The mayor's given us a lot of leeway with our staff to implement this by working in conjunction with other departments, with DPW, as they gear up towards the physical overhaul of Market, which is coming up in a couple of years. But then also working very closely with the police department, with supervisor's office, with the community nonprofits that are there, the small business owners, and you know, the neighborhood and community groups. And it's a massive effort. It's challenging, but I'm hopeful. You know,
so was it not as collaborative last time?
You know, I think there's been many efforts over many years to do different things. You know, I've been in the city for 17 years and wasn't actively involved, but I was a neighbor. I lived in the South Market area during the mid 90s, during the .com years, and I think that we're poised this time a little bit different, too, because some of the tech businesses that are coming in are actually making investments into the community, which I think is a big difference. And I think you see a lot more collaboration between some of the arts groups and the tech groups and the merchants that are there and the neighbors. I think it's a lot more of a cohesive effort.
Well, you know, so why would listeners believe that this effort would work when so many previous initiatives have failed?
That's a tough question. You know, I think that all you can do is trust the leadership that we have, but also look at the real tangible things that we're seeing happen. We're seeing activation of UN Plaza starting to happen with arts and music happening out there. We were able to bring food trucks down there a couple of days a week. We are seeing, you know, some interest from, you know, huge tech companies. Dolby just came in and wanted to be in the area without signing the payroll tax agreement, which I think shows that, you know, for very, you know, hefty price they paid for that building. So I think that there's a lot of interest down there, and it's also, you know, it's the main thoroughfare of San Francisco, and I think that there's a lot of interest in placemaking that didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. It's a big buzzword in community development.
What does that mean?
Yeah, placemaking is, you know, if you look at what they did in New York with you know, kind of pulling Times Square and putting in, you know, like more of a pedestrian zone. I think that the city, as we build with the better Market Street plan, we're looking at many, many facets of how to activate a street that go beyond just putting in a new business or, you know, repaving. That it's to make a bad analogy, it's you know, weaving a weaving something, and it takes all of the fibers at once to mesh together before it'll stay together. Because if you have anything unraveled, it isn't going to work.
Well, what's the time frame?
The Better Market Street plan is not going to, they won't start the repaving until 2015, but I think that a lot of these efforts are, you know, they're going to take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, a lot of these are, it's a slow and steady effort. It's no change happens overnight.
Okay. Well, let me bring in Jane Kim, Supervisor of District 6. This is your district, mm-hmm. Your people. Do you buy into the vision?
Well, this was the first legislation that I had the opportunity to work on as a supervisor. So when I came into office in January, it was actually the first piece of legislation we worked on and were approached about. And I actually, you know, I really struggled with this legislation. I'm someone who really believes in taxes. I believe that it's an investment in our neighborhood, our communities, whether it's our public schools, our streets, our cops. And so I had to really think very carefully about whether I would support this or not. And clearly, we didn't want to lose a company like Twitter because they were growing, they were creating jobs, and of course, they're a company that was born in San Francisco. But the question is, at what cost would we keep them here? And so there are a couple of things that I considered in evaluating the legislation. A, they were interested in mid-market, and mid-market has the highest commercial vacancy of any corridor in San Francisco, hands down, higher than the Bayview and many other neighborhoods that people were talking about. And B, there was a lot of infrastructure in mid-market. So even though there was a high commercial vacancy, we have, you know, at least 14 minibus lines running through it. So it was already transit friendly. It already had a lot of the infrastructure and open space that was needed. So then the next question is why? Why tax cut? Why would we
and
use
wait,
that?
Can you actually give some background? Because I don't know that all listeners are aware of the tax cut and, you know, of the tax, you know, the legislation that explains the payroll tax exclusion.
Sure. So we were really careful in crafting it. It started as a discussion of actually a complete tax exclusion for any company that moved into mid-market. And I think we wanted to be very careful that it was only a tax exclusion for net new jobs created in the city. And so that was kind of the negotiation that ended up happening. Because the dialogue had always been around creating jobs in San Francisco, we want to be careful and say that Twitter would continue, or any company like Zendesk would continue to pay the base payroll tax that they had paid prior to moving to mid-market. But any new jobs they created while they were in mid-market, they would get an exclusion for 6 years. But in order to get that exclusion, you would have to negotiate a community benefits agreement with that neighborhood. And I think Ellen was right. You know, in the past, when we had dot-com companies move in, there was no requests that they actually partner with our existing neighborhoods and communities. So it's twofold. But, you know, the second thing is that when I looked at our building stock in mid-market, what you found was a lot of older buildings, many of which had been vacant for 50, 60 years since the BART tunneling had started. And there was an incredible amount of investment that needed to happen in those buildings itself. And actually, the tax exclusion would allow companies to retrofit or rehabilitate these old buildings as well. So actually, the companies had to make an investment in mid-market. And that was part of how I looked at it, was us helping to subsidize that investment versus us giving that money to property owners to do mm-hmm. it. And, you know, SF Mart, which is where Twitter moved, Zendesk moved to 6th Street. I mean, SF Mart had been vacant for 50, 60 years, and there was a tremendous amount of investment that both the property owner and the company had to make to move in there.
So it made sense.
It made sense. It's a struggle because it's a fine balance, and I think that our office, as we continue to work on what is called the revitalization of mid-market, mm-hmm. always emphasizes that we need to revitalize, but we also need to stabilize the existing community. We're not trying to push out the residents, the seniors, the families that live in the Tenderloin and the South Market, which has often been the affordable neighborhoods in San Francisco.
Sure.
And so that's why we expect when companies move in that they learn about the neighborhood that they're moving in with, which is what Zendesk is doing currently. So they're touring the neighborhoods. They're investing in an issue that I think is greatly needed in the Tenderloin, which is food justice, because there aren't any grocery stores or access to fresh and healthy food. And so it's a great way for Zendesk also to help the neighborhood with that need while also moving in and creating jobs and of course, getting a tax exclusion for being in that neighborhood.
So do you think, I mean, so it's interesting you kind of talked about that kind of last, about the people, you know, the neighbors. What was your feeling about their feeling about this, all this revitalization?
You know, it was and it continues to be a very controversial topic. And there are people that are incredibly happy that these vacant buildings finally have life again, and that there's a true commitment from the city to the mid-market corridor and 6th Street and the Tenderloin. And there's also a lot of continuing concerns about what these tech companies mean. We're seeing rising rents, not just for residential tenants, but also commercial tenants who have less rights than residential tenants do here in San Francisco. People are feeling that crunch. And they're also wondering, who are these jobs for? So is it going to benefit our neighborhoods? And that's part of the push, too. We're asking our tech companies. And I just had a meeting today with Singa and Riverbed and Salesforce about how we can ensure that they're investing in job training programs so that they can actually hire our local residents from the Tenderloin, from Western Addition, from the Mission, from Bayview, Excelsior, OMI area. So they're experiencing the benefits of this job growth here in the city. And so I think it's just a lot of work. We have to continue to work to make this the right type of success for our city.
So do you think everyone wins?
Well, I'm hoping that everyone wins, but it's a lot of work. It's not easy. We've been meeting for months with all of these tech companies. And, you know, the movement is slow, and I admit it. But I know the tech companies are committed to it. We're committed to it. And we just have to make those outcomes happen. And, you know, already this summer, we had thousands of youth that were provided internships from some of these tech companies as well. And I think that's just the beginning.
I want to go back to this, but actually, let me throw out the question now. I mean, in terms of, is there really a match between the educational level of the residents and the jobs created at these tech companies? Is it realistic?
We were talking today about what is the training gap, right? Is it just some of it might be learning how to work in a company, for example, just being in that kind of corporate climate. Two is getting the companies themselves to train their workers on how to work with diverse employees. Third is, of course, technical training. Tech companies still have HR, they still have janitorial, they still have catering needs, and they actually have, entry-level IT workers, people who set up the computers. And what kind of training do you need to invest to do that? And I think that's where we're really looking. We want our tech companies to be successful here, so we want them to be able to partner with existing job training organizations, whether it's JVS or Europe. We do have several organizations that have been successful in helping either adults who are in mid-career but are unemployed get retrained and retooled to work in the tech force, or work with youth that are coming out of SFUSD or City College or SF State, so that they have the skill set that they need to compete. But, you know, the tech companies also have to, you know, actually agree to hire these folks that come out of the training program. We can't just train them and have them not hire.
Sure.
And so it's a commitment that we are expecting from them. And I believe that they are actually truly committed to this. But I just want to say, it's not just enough to do the mid-market tax exclusion. That was just step one.
Right.
And there are
the hook.
Multiple steps that it's a long process and it's a ton of work, but we're engaging in it.
Okay. Well, let me go to Tamika. Tamika Moss. Now, you, as the Community Planning Policy Director of SPUR, can you give us some historical perspective on the challenges of this effort compared to past efforts that have failed?
Yeah, well, you know, Market Street is the Grand Boulevard of San Francisco. It really is a civic spine for the city. And so there inherently have been a lot of planning efforts along Market Street that people are drawn to because it has so much vitality and contribution to the city. There are 34 transit lines on Market Street. And so it really is the central boulevard of San Francisco. And I think, you know, even SPUR in the 1960s, we were trying to think about this really grand street and cultivate one vision for the street. And I think what we're seeing now in the discussion so far is that we look at Market Street more as a many streets with many functions. And so each Market Street is 3 miles long, and each segment of the street has a different function for different neighborhoods. And so I think part of the success of this effort so far is just scaling down this sort of desire to plan for a large grand boulevard and one plan fits all, and really looking at individual efforts that are cultivating the needs of each neighborhood along Market Street. So I think that that's something that is different from the past. SPUR cultivated this plan back in 1962, and it had, you know, this really grand idea of doing sunken roads and, planners. That's what we do. But I think what we realized is that the arterial streets and the neighborhood surrounding Market Street is really what you have to cultivate in addition to what you actually do for the infrastructure of the street. So I think that that's something very different this time than past efforts along Market Street.
Do you think the other efforts focused more on the physical as opposed to like the environmental?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the street needs to be functional. And so I think there's a lot of intention around making sure that the street works. Right now, we have incredible transit along Market Street that's really slow. And so you balance sort of the infrastructure and the functionality of the street with how people and neighborhoods use the street. And I think that that's something that's really important. And we're trying to, it feels to me this time that, you know, the arts focus, the tech companies, but also, you know, they're CBDs, the community benefit districts that were created, the North Market Tenderloin CBD and the Central Market CBD in 2005 and 2007 were really the first time that there was a commitment by property owners to assess themselves and say, you know what, we want to figure out what our contribution is to this neighborhood mm-hmm. and how can we play a role in contributing to small business cultivation, to street beautification, to public safety issues. And so I don't want our conversation just to be limited to the tech community, because in fact, there are many ways to cultivate a sense of community along Market Street that has been going on for a long time. And as you know, Jane and Ellen have said, this is a one stop on a really long journey to improving the street and helping it reach its full potential.
You know, I just have one quick question. Do you think that the demographics, I mean, I feel like when you read in the newspaper, you feel that this the generation of workers today are a lot more interested in making a difference in their community. Do you think that that is making this a viable option that might not have been, like, even in the .com where it seemed like it was like kind of me? Have you, in your research, or have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the people are committed to trying to figure out how to coexist with Market Street. It feels like there's more of an organic, you know, sort of the arts perspective, or, you know, creating middle income, multiple economic strategies around, you know, the folks who are in poverty to all the tech workers. So I definitely think there's this sort of hodgepodge of energy that's different. And I think that there are a lot of people who have been working on this for a long time. And so it feels to me that it's really an extension. Yeah. And there's a place now for the new generation to participate in that conversation and take some ownership of what mm-hmm. the neighborhoods and Market Street will be for the future.
Okay. Let me add on to that, though. I have noticed a marked difference between companies, especially tech companies today, and what I even saw 5 years ago. And the financial meltdown and the kind of the ethical decisions that people really question that were made in the financial markets previous that led to that meltdown has really actually informed a different generation of folks that are joining the private sector. And I hear it a lot from tech employees. And I was actually really impressed in my meetings with a lot of these tech companies in the South of Market that they do want to be a different type of business. They don't want to be like the banks that, you know, caused this meltdown, that caused 100%. Foreclosures. And they're very aware of their power in the private sector. And because of that, they want to do things differently. And it's really interesting to talk to young tech workers who talk about what does ethics and morality mean in the private sector.
Well, let me, first of all, I just want to say this is City Visions on local public radio 91.7 KALW. And tonight we're discussing the revitalization of Mid-Market here in San Francisco. My guests are Jane Kim, Supervisor of District 6 San Francisco, Tamika Moss, the Community Planning Policy Director at SPUR, Ellen Parker, Project Manager, Neighborhood of Economic Development at the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development. And by phone, we have Ellen Richard, the Executive Director of the American Conservatory Theater, which is ACT. And we definitely want to hear from you. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you have any thoughts on, you know, whether you feel this approach is going well, if it's too slow, if you want to join in, we want to hear from you. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to bring in, we haven't been able to talk yet, to Ellen Richard. Good evening, Ellen. I want to bring you into the conversation and talk a little bit about the focus on arts as part of the economic strategy. So, you know, businesses are asking the city to bring in more performances and art events to drive money. Do you think this is realistic?
We're happy that, you know, that we've purchased the Strand and that in 2.5 years we hope to have a 300-seat professional theater operating there, which I think will make a big difference, and particularly at night, is when we have most of our performances, to many of the local businesses. In addition to that, we have our costume shop. Our costume shop is at 1119 Market between 7th and 8th, and we've been building our costumes there for 15 years. And this past year, we took the front part of the building and have turned it into a wonderful small black box space. And our goal is to try and keep the lights on. I think it will really help establish this neighborhood, and it'll make it feel safer too if there's activity.
Well, why do you think the arts are considered so important for revitalizing this neighborhood?
Well, it's the humanity, right? I mean, you know, you have your business, and then having music and art and theater. Will really provide so much to the city and the neighbors too, that community. There's been a lot of small groups in the Tenderloin and Soma, but I think lighting the lights on Market Street will not only bring the nighttime traffic. You know, I mean, the businesses will keep things going during the day, but it's really important that there's activity at night too, to support the restaurants and really to provide services and art to the local population.
Well, you already have the Orpheum there, there already are a couple of venues there already in terms of like music, but do you think that those are overlooked because of all the storefronts, or that people just kind of come there as a destiny and then leave?
Well, I think the Orpheum and the Golden Gate, those are wonderful performance spaces, but they're the big sort of Broadway show type performance spaces with fairly high ticket prices. I mean, what we're trying to offer and plan to offer to the community is really a variety of options in ways also to use our spaces, make our spaces available to the community. At the Strand, we'll have a 300-seat theater, but we'll also have a 100-seat, also kind of black box space that, you know, we want activity. We want to keep the doors open all the time. So we have a program right now where we're giving space to the community for free at our costume shop, and we plan to keep with that program once we open up at the Strand. It's just having, you know, lights on 50 weeks a year is kind of critical, whereas the Orpheum and the Golden Gate, they're open only intermittently, so they can't make that kind of impact. You know, restaurants can't depend upon them to sustain their business.
I'd like to offer a comment about why the arts are so important. You know, the Tenderloin and Mid-Market neighborhoods have a really rich history of art. I mean, in the 1920s, it was one of the places to go for theater and arts entertainment. And I think Market Street in 1923 was one of the most popular streets in the world. And so I think it's really important to understand that this isn't necessarily a new strategy, but it really is trying to reinvigorate what was great in the assets of these surrounding neighborhoods and the street. And the arts, I think, is an inclusive tool that was really a part of the Tenderloin and Mid-Market history. And we're moving that agenda forward as well.
I like that. Wait, let me just, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the revitalization of Mid-Market here in San Francisco. And having a really interesting conversation. My guests are Jane Kim, Supervisor of District 6 San Francisco, Tamika Moss, who's the Community Planning Policy Director at SPUR, Ellen Lynn Parker, the project manager, Neighborhood Economic Development at the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and Ellen Richard, the executive director of the American Conservatory Theater, ACT. And we would love you to join in and call in with your questions and comments. Again, the number to call is 415-841-4134. That's 841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. We do have a couple people holding, but let me first go to Ellen Parker.
I think you wanted
to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to tag on to what you were saying about the existing arts community and why it's so important. And I think there's so many little theater groups that are in the area. Bindlestiff is down on 6th mm-hmm. Street. We've got the Exit Theater. We've got mm-hmm. Counterpulse over on Knight. The Climate, which is down a little bit. Cutting Ball Theater just did a really amazing production about the Tenderloin. Mm-hmm. And then we have the newer arts groups that are coming in. You know, Burning Man is in a building down there. We've got Gray Area Foundation for the Arts, who are doing, you know, really interesting cutting edge things in the electronic world. We've got the smaller ones that have been there for a long time. We have this pocket already kind of arts happening, and it's, I think, a lot of it, one of the things that we see the CBDs are getting ready to launch is a kind of a collaborative calendar, which is going to really try to showcase all of the arts that's down there, because I think it's, people don't even realize all the little pockets. I saw Hedwig down at the Boxcar Theater last weekend, and it was amazing. So there's all kinds of, you know, smaller, tiny places that people can go catch really interesting theater, and
that's,
I think that's
point.
What tourists want. They don't come to tour tech companies. They come to see the quirky, interesting music and theater mm-hmm. that makes San Francisco so fun and
it's right
eclectic.
There. Mm-hmm. Let me go to a caller. We have John. Good evening, John.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for holding.
Thanks. I guess I have a comment and a question, sort of. I opened up Market Street Cycles on Market about 8 months ago. I kind of know Ellen Parker from the years ago. Hi, how you doing, Ellen?
Hi.
I don't know how far down this effort goes. I'm sorry if you've already answered that question, but I tell you, on my block, right where Page and Franklin come in and 12th Street, not only do I not feel like the city is working to clean it up, I feel like the undesirable stuff gets pushed to this block. There is open crack dealing, prostitution, defecation, the whole thing, you name it, all day long, every day. And there's a thing called a community benefit district, which is organized by some of the local property owners, and they have guys in orange jackets that come along and try to make a dent, but it's not it's not like a real enforceable thing. They can't really do anything. So I guess I'm just wondering how far down the city's efforts are going to stretch down Market, if I'm even considered mid-market here, and what kind of enforcement issues might be addressed under the plan.
That's a great. That's a really good point, John.
Hi, John. I'm glad you've opened up down there. I think I did pop by on you a while ago and said hi.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to. We have staffing capacity too. Right now, we're kind of focused between 5th and 10th or 11th and Van Ness. I'm actually really pushing for us to kind of go all the way to Octavia, because that's where the physical overhaul, and there's a lot of vacancies down kind of where you are. There's a new pastry cupboard, and the Bold Italic is a block over. You've got Grammy has just moved in right down there too, and I know that the Civic Center CBD is working hard to kind of improve their services, and I'll happily provide that feedback back to their director too. Hi, Don. But you know, we would love to be able to expand that so that it works all the way down there, because I think Market Street is, you know, it's a cohesive street that we can't just focus on one little part. So, you know, I know where to find y'all. I'll see what we can do to kind of broaden our efforts down there. And we can definitely pop in with some of the marketing efforts and connect you more with the CBDs on that end.
We would love that.
I think that is an interesting point, though, which is that there is a lot of the, you know, at this point, there is a lot of the traffic, the drug traffic, all the things that John talked about. And so, you know, how are you going to approach this as part of the strategy? I mean, Jane?
I mean, I'll just start. I mean, it is a long haul process, and the mid-market tax exclusion was one of the first steps, at least, you know, when our office became engaged. And so there is a level of investment that the businesses that do come into the area are making when they come in. It's not a transformed area. And to a certain extent, also, we want to preserve kind of characters of that neighborhood too. And so you want the transformation to happen slowly. Otherwise, what you do experience is kind of vast displacement as mm-hmm. well. And so you want to be very careful about how that change happens. And so we're very careful when we approach businesses and we talk to organizations about coming to mid-market and that area. We want the right type of folks that are kind of ready to transition with us and are also willing to make that investment in that neighborhood. That was part of the tax exclusion, is that we understand that you're making an investment in a neighborhood that needs it.
Yep.
So I think they're just kind of a, you know, so we are, you know, working with our community benefit districts as well. We're working very closely with SFPD. We invested, and the mayor's office made a priority to invest in a 6th Street substation so we can actually have foot patrol and not have to have cops, you know, have to spend some of their time just driving back and forth between the Hall of Justice, but they can make their reports directly on 6th between Market and Mission and then go back out and continue the foot beat. And the mayor's office and the board has made a commitment through this year's city budget. I mean, we vastly increased our investment in how we assist small businesses, whether it's the revolving loan fund, whether it's just kind of a team, a cadre of folks within Ellen's part of the mayor's office that actually go out and troubleshoot for small businesses, whether it's street cleaning or graffiti removal or just kind of developing a better business model to be able to compete in the city are all things that we want to help small businesses do.
So but, Jane also from someone else who's written in, and she wants to know how the neighborhood can change when there's so many people living in the street. And is there someone somewhere else for these people to go during the day and not, she says, not jail either.
Mm-hmm.
So I
you know, I'll just really quickly, I know Tamika wants Jane to speak as well. You know, homelessness is a big struggle for the city. And actually, as the economy went downhill, what we actually saw were more individuals on the street and honestly, more families on the street. So there was a couple of things. I mean, one, I mean, the city is investing, along with companies like Salesforce, actually in rental subsidies to help people keep in their current place if they can't afford their rent. We're funding rapid rehousing, so helping people get back into housing. And also something we had to cut in the last couple of years was actually these drop-in centers for people that are homeless. And we were able to help refund some of that this year as well as the economy gets better. Unfortunately, when the economy went down, it also cut our general fund and our ability to provide services. But I think people also have to acknowledge that, you know, we live in an urban city. People can refuse services, and that it isn't a crime to be homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a crime to be out on the streets. And there is a level of compassion that we also ask from our residents as well.
Okay. Tamika.
Yeah, and just to elaborate a little bit on that, I think that, you know, we have to also remember that the primary housing stock in these neighborhoods are SRO units, and they are 100 square feet. And it's not a lot of space. And so a lot of people call the sidewalks their recreational space. The people spend their time recreating and being on Market Street and in the surrounding neighborhoods.
Can you explain what SRO is for listeners?
Yeah, it stands for single room occupancy hotels. And what the housing stock in the surrounding neighborhoods were formerly tourist hotels that were converted into residential use by some zoning ordinance that happened in the 80s, 85, I believe, to ensure that poor folks in the Tenderloin and surrounding neighborhoods would be able to have a place to call home. And it is permanently affordable. Many of the units are owned by some of the nonprofit affordable housing developers in the city. And so I think it's important to understand that, you know, part of what we perceive as homelessness is not necessarily homelessness. People use Market Street for many different purposes. And so I think it's important to understand that we want that use to be harmonious and mutually beneficial, and not necessarily just sort of seeing people and assuming homelessness, because a lot of folks are housed and are still using Market Street as a part of their experience with San Francisco.
And that's what makes Market Street Market Street.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ellen.
And I think, too, that one of the things that we can do from the city, and I'm hopeful on this, is that we can really start to make, you know, some investment in the SROs, because they are, you know, a lot of them are just ordinary people that's where they're living, and they just, you know, need some investment. They need places to cook food. I'd love to see, you know, the rooftops be activated so that they become a space where everybody could go up. It would help with climate change. We could grow food. It's my own personal tangent. But I think that there is a lot of misperception on the mm-hmm. people that are out loitering on the streets. Just don't. That's their living room, and that's why mm-hmm. the placemaking needs to be done in a way that is inclusive to the people that live in the neighborhood, and to the tourists, and to the artists, and to the tech workers. It needs to be done to include everybody.
If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7. Tonight we're discussing the revitalization of Mid-Market. My guests are Jane Kim, Supervisor, District 6, Tamika Moss, the Community Planning Planning Policy Director of SPUR, Ellen Parker, Project Manager, Neighborhood Economic Development, the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, Ellen Richard, the Executive Director of ACT, and we just are joined right now by Tiffany Epchinski, who's the Community Relations Manager at Zendesk. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments, and the number to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to welcome Tiffany into our conversation. You know, we've been talking a lot about the role that businesses can play in this whole collaboration, and you have a big say in this as the community relations manager at Zendesk. I'm curious how you found the work going along with this. I know that it's sort of easy to sign a dotted line and say, sure, we'll do it, but then when it comes down to actually implementing sort of the vision, I'd love you to talk about kind of what you found is what's working easily and the challenges that go along with that.
Sure, and so we were the first tech company to move to the mid-market neighborhood that had a community benefits agreement. And so we're in the process of implementing that right now. And I think, to go back to what Supervisor Jane Kim was saying before, you know, the great thing about tech companies and sort of the new generation workforce is you have companies that, you know, we're startups, and the whole thing is we want to use our innovation and our intelligence and the creativity we have here to make our product better, to stand up from the competition. And it's that same spirit and it's that same tenor that drives sort of the philanthropy you're seeing, sort of drives the desire to do good and give back to the neighborhood and be part of the community. So for us, when we had to draft and implement a community benefits agreement, it was not just something we had to do, it was something that we saw as a part of our company culture. It's doing things like this, it's embracing our neighborhood, and it's seeing how creatively we can use technology or just our sheer presence to drive innovation that has really, like, motivated us as a company to enjoy the process and want to see it through future iterations.
How are you actually, you know, dealing with kind of the ways that they like you to participate with the community?
Well, we're dealing with the ways that they'd like us to participate, you know, fantastically, because there was so much freedom given to us in how we drafted the benefits agreement. One of the first things that happened is there's a citizens advisory committee that's sort of overseeing the process. It's an advisory committee that is made up of residents and business people from the mid-market district. So one of the first things we did was invite them to our offices, and we listened first. We asked, what do you want? What do you need? What does this agreement mean to you? And we got some direction from them that was pretty loose. And then what we were able to do is draft an agreement that met the needs that the neighborhood needed while being able to work with the strength that Zendesk could offer. And we were able to draft a plan that was diverse enough that we could find something that nearly every person in our company would have an interest in and want to invest their time in.
Okay, well, you know, the other half of this is the tax exclusion rule. Was that a big draw for Zendesk in terms of landing mid-market?
Surprisingly, it actually wasn't. We used to be located at 5th and Townsend. We were right near the ballpark. And we were there with Yammer, who's now moving to mid-market as well, so they're destined to be our neighbor again. And so when we were down there, we had, you know, outgrown the space very quickly, and we were simply looking to be in the city, actually. We looked at our current space, which is at the corner of 6th and Market, and our third-floor space, we've since grown into the second floor as well, but our third-floor space was owned by an architecture firm was here before we were. So we came in, and it felt so move-in ready because it kind of had the style that we wanted. So it looked beautiful. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. So, I mean, it sounds like you didn't – there was no need. I mean, it was
– we were working with a realtor who was helping us look at locations throughout the city, and most of the locations initially – were in the financial district, and design is very, very important to Zendesk, and the sort of spaces we were looking at in the financial district just felt too dated for the company. And so then, you know, our realtor led us to this space and also had mentioned, by the way, you know, there was a payroll tax exclusion. But we knew we weren't, because of the size of our company and the growth of it, we knew that in the first few years that tax exclusion probably wouldn't really give us the savings that would be of great magnitude until a few years going in. But it's still definitely persuaded us to come here, for sure. It helped us. But, you know, we were one of the tech companies that were going to stay in the city no matter what. Our founders are originally Danish. They were committed to staying in San Francisco. They didn't want the long commute outside of the city. And we felt, in terms of our recruiting efforts, we needed to keep local as well to get the best talent possible here in the heart of things versus getting them on Caltrain or what have you.
Well, it's really interesting to get kind of, you know, your like on the ground perspective. I want to actually just a couple of things. First, I want to thank Jane Kim for being a part of our show. She has to leave us now, but thank you so much, Supervisor.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this dialogue, especially with so many women.
I know. So let me, I actually want to start going to our callers. We've got many people on the line who want to say something. So, well, first of all, let me go to, Drew. Drew, welcome to City Visions.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I have been a commercial real estate private money lender for quite some time and lived in the city until 3 years ago. And I was very, interested in your the actual definition of the payroll tax exclusion, but also if there's somewhere where we can go where we can find a map or a list of the actual companies that have committed to being in this mid-market corridor already. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for that question. Ellen, do you want to answer that?
Sure. We have a lot of detailed information about the payroll tax exclusion either on one of two websites, centralmarketpartnership.org or the Office of Economic Workforce's site, which is OEWD.org. There is not a running list, but I know actually that is one of the things, if you stay up to date on our Facebook or on our Twitter, that we are constantly promoting. But I know that there is actually the works to try and get a map together, GIS and kind of all of the new tech companies that have been coming in. So,
okay, thank you so much for that call. And let me go to Bardia. Good evening, Bardia. Thank you for joining City Visions.
Hi, thank you. Look, I'm a commercial property owner in SoMa, and I was wondering, with the tax exclusion, what's likely to happen after 6 years? And if the tax exclusion is not going to be extended after 6 years, what's likely to happen to the mid-market district?
Is that something that you would, you know, how would that impact you?
Yeah, so I mean, what's happening? Obviously, the vacancy rate in the SoMa district is, you know, at an all time low, and so a lot of companies are moving to mid market just because there's very little space left. So as a property owner, you know, I've been looking in the mid market. I'm interested in buying in mid market, but this 6 year thing, I mean, it's really encouraging that the city's doing this, but there's an open question as to what's going to happen. And really what the impact is to mid-market in 6 years' time.
Sure. Now that's a good point.
Sure.
Ellen, do you want to take this one?
Well, I think, you know, my best guesstimate on it is that, you know, all of the cities, all of the businesses that have come in, and they're well aware that this is only for 6 years. And if they didn't have that confidence, I think, in their own business to know that the growth of their business is going to be strong enough, that they wouldn't have made that investment. And most of the time, the leases are much longer than that 6 years. So...
Yeah, and I also think,
Tamika.
Yeah, it's important for the community and the city to reevaluate whether or not these are really effective strategies. And so I think the 6 year timeline provides an opportunity for business to cultivate, but also then to do an analysis and see how effective the strategy is, and really have the flexibility of tweaking it as we move forward with this initiative.
Okay, thank you so much, Bardia, for your question, bringing that issue up. We also have a woman who has called it and wants to know about resources for women in the neighborhood who need jobs, especially for women who've struggled and may not have had much education. Ellen, is that something you can talk to?
There's a lot of different workforce programs in the area. There's a whole lot of them. I could go through a bunch of the chefs program through Episcopal Community Services. We have the city's one-stop programs. We have a lot of the workforce programs. Gosh, there's a whole bunch, and I'm going to blank the names right now, but I can look through. But Tamika, go ahead.
The Department of Public Health actually puts together a list of all the service providers that are within the mid-market and Tenderloin district. And so that would be a really good resource for folks who are looking for an organization to connect with. Renaissance does a ton of work with women and people who want to start their own businesses. One of the beautiful things about this neighborhood is that it is so service rich. And so people who want an opportunity to improve their skills and become a part of this market that the tech industry and others are really trying to manifest on Market Street and in the surrounding neighborhoods, there certainly are opportunities for people to get involved in the Tenderloin and surrounding neighborhoods.
You know, I'm curious, and I'd like to actually go to Ellen Richard, from ACT. You'd mentioned that you have your venue or your part of your venue is available for free, but it seems, you know, do you, as part of your incentive for being there, have any ideas for how you might bring in the local workers and to be able to help you?
Well, I think when we do get the Strand open, we will have at least 30 more jobs in that neighborhood. And I mean, it's a little bit down the road, but I know that we would love to do outreach and try and identify people from the community that can fill some of the jobs. I mean, some of them are very specialized, you know, in terms of needing theater skills, but there's some that we feel that would be a fit for the neighborhood.
And so, was that kind of part of what you were thinking in terms of moving into the neighborhood, is that collaborative feel of bringing the community in from a job training perspective?
I mean, it wasn't so. I mean, we were really thinking about how to have the community be present on stage, and mm-hmm. and also use and also provide education to the community. That's a huge focus for ACT. But we would be happy to provide jobs, and we just got to get that theater built first.
Right. Sure. Well, let me go back to you, Tamika, in terms of the tech workers. Overshadowing the existing of the residents in the neighborhood and mid-market. Do you think that is that a concern for you?
Well, I mean, I think, as Jane said earlier, it really is about balance. You know, there is a really strong community already working hard to make their quality of life better, who want to contribute positively to their neighborhood. And so I think it's important. You know, the community benefits agreements are great, and I love what Ellen said about this, you know, sort of social consciousness that a lot of the young workforce has for understanding that to be, you know, coming to a new neighborhood and community requires listening and understanding what the needs are of the folks who are there. And I think that integration is really important. You know, these communities have seen devastation over 5 decades. And so it's important to infuse economic drivers that really do stimulate an opportunity for all ships to sail. But at the same time, we need to really do some asset building and understanding what are the resources that people who live and work in this community already can add and complement to this new wave of innovation through the tech industry. So I think it really is about balance.
Do you think that the small business owners are feeling excited about the new foot traffic or feeling a little intimidated?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, I think, and Ellen can probably speak to this a bit more, but I think, you know, when you are small and you're trying to get your business started, there's a lot of fear about how you will be able to sustain it for the future. And I think the neighborhoods around Market Street has experienced that for a long time. And so this feels new to them and different, but I do think that the city and the community stakeholders are putting a lot of support in order to make these efforts more sustainable.
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to Ellen and actually ask you. So right now, the mayor's office is working to create a multidimensional plan for improving the economic and social well-being of mid-market. And at the same time, the Better Market Street effort is laying the groundwork for physical changes that are proposed for the Market Street, including new bike lanes, pedestrian access, public spaces. So how are these two efforts coordinating their work to ensure cohesion and avoid duplication?
Sure. Well, our office works very closely with the Better Market Street team. and they actually are starting their public workshops this week. One's tomorrow night, one is on Saturday, and then there's a webinar. You can get information on their Better Market Street website, which I believe is Better Market Street SF. But we work very closely with them. Their project managers and I know each other. We actually worked on Divisadero together. And so I think there's a lot of conversations back and forth with us and with multiple departments just to make sure that we're, you know, looking at the things like where the public spaces need to be activated or where we could have little performance nodes or places for activation, whether it was music or art, something happening on the street. But then also making sure that they talk to the businesses too, because anytime you do a major construction project, it does impact the businesses that are on that corridor, and they, you know, the city needs to make sure that they're working with them to make sure they survive the construction project too. So
yeah, okay. And Tamika, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think it's a reflection of what our, of, again, the street's history. When BART was coming in the 1960s, all of the retail businesses that were along Market Street really suffered, and they weren't really able to rebound and join the economic vitality once BART came in. And so I think it's important to understand that you need that support as all of these changes are going on, and we need to have a higher level of consciousness as we move forward.
That makes sense. Well, we're almost at the top of the hour, but what I want to let each of you do is give just a definition of when you think, like, what will Market Street be when there's success? When it, you know, how will we know when we've been successful? So why don't I start with you, Tiffany?
Sure. I think one thing to keep in mind is when we look at Market Street 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, the goal will be to have the landscape kind of stay where it's at. Because one thing, this goes back to the point of it is about integration, and we want tech companies to come here and fit into the tapestry that is mid-market, and we want small businesses to thrive without overpowering any one segment. So in one way, I think the expectations need to be set that In many ways, I think it will look and feel somewhat the same, but hopefully with a lower vacancy rate for businesses and just more of that energy that we talk about that came in the 30s, the 20s, 30s, and 40s when the movie theaters really drove foot traffic and things like that. So I think we want parts of those to definitely come alive without displacing too much of what's here already.
Fantastic. And what about you, Ellen? Richard?
For Market Street to be successful?
Yeah, when will we know that Market Street's successful, or what do we need?
I think when there's, when the lights are on, when there's options for people, when there's entertainment, when there's more restaurants, when people feel safe. I think safety is really critical for Market Street. But I think when you see pedestrians on the street on a regular basis, that's when we'll know that it's successful.
Okay. And what about you, Ellen Park?
I agree with Ellen there. When we start to see the lights, coming on in all the buildings, and we have a lot more of those vacancies down, and then we see kind of a cohesive community that's able to be out there and activated, and then also, yeah, to feel safe walking around at night, I think is a big point.
Okay.
I don't know what that time will be. But
we'll get back. And what about you, Tamika?
I think we'll know Market Street is successful when it's a street for all, when you can walk, when you can bike, when you can be someone who is a low-income resident of the neighborhood, and you can be walking next to someone who is not and feel comfortable and be able to utilize Market Street as a place that you call San Francisco and call your home. And so I think a lot of the community policing efforts, like what's happening with the community Justice Center and others, will help cultivate this sense of community, and everybody can take some accountability for what Market Street is going to be. And I think that that heightens the level of investment for Market Street. And the quicker we can do that, I think the physical and public realm improvements are just extra.
So do we have a time frame? Do you have a guess of when that vision might become reality?
Well, I mean, I think what Ellen said earlier, the 2015 timeline when DPW is going to be repaving Market Street can give way to opportunity around moving some of these items forward in terms of the economic development strategy and some of these other small business cultivation pieces that we're working on.
So 2015 is when we might start feeling it? Or okay, well, we won't pin you down. Well, that's it. That's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Jane Kim, Supervisor for District 6 San Francisco, Tamika Moss, the Community Planning Policy Director for SPUR, Ellen Parker, Project Manager, Neighborhood Economic Development for the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, Ellen Richard, the Executive Director for ACT, and Tiffany Epchinski, the Community Relations Manager for Zendesk. Thank you all for being a part of tonight's show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And for a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website. You can go to the right to KALW.org and go to programs, and then that will take you right to City Visions. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Thank you so much, Eric. And tonight's show was produced by Victoria Thorpe. Great show, Victoria. City Vision's senior producer is Susie Britton. Join my co-host Joseph Pache next week when we'll explore the connection between fertility, sperm donors, the FDA, and LGBTQ family making. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.